Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day vacation fix for Wednesday, June 17th, 2015. The show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort. And pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals. And an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Show, I'm talking with Jeff Swearingen about his Royal Caribbean Norwegian cruise aboard the Serenade of the Seas. Welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Aaron.
So you were telling me before we started that, you know, this is sort of the Royal Caribbean version of Disney's Norwegian Fjords cruise, right?
That's right. It's pretty much the same itinerary. The one difference, I believe, is that the Disney one goes to Oslo and the Royal Caribbean does not.
Okay. But what I really liked was your alternative description for what this cruise was.
This cruise is the real life version of Maelstrom. Everything we learned about Norway from Maelstrom is 100% true.
All right. So I'm looking forward to hearing how all this unfolds. You know, let's kind of start at the beginning with when you decided to take this particular cruise, and maybe, you know, what is it that spurred your interest in it?
Well, actually, we had taken a last-minute cruise. We live in Orlando. We're an hour away from both Tampa and Port Canaveral ports. So we found a good deal back in November for a quick weekend cruise. And this was coincidentally just right after they had the big closing of Maelstrom and announced it was going to be replaced by the Frozen Sisters.
Right.
So that was on our mind a little bit. And then we just came across a really good deal on board the ship, and we figured, hey, we'll book this, and then we'll go back and check the Disney price and see which one works out better for us. So we booked it, came back, and the Royal Caribbean actually worked out better for us in a couple of respects. I would have rather gone on Disney. I think the food on Disney is much better and the service is better, but I'm actually going to give Royal Caribbean the edge on entertainment so far. But there was a combination of reasons that this worked better for us. The first one being we got a balcony on Royal Caribbean for less than it would have cost to get an interior room on the Disney cruise.
Right. Yeah, that price difference really hits home.
It's a big one. And the other one was that with the timing of the Disney cruise, my wife is pregnant, and it would have left just beyond the point where she could cruise.
Oh, yeah, so that's an important thing, because Disney just tweaked their rules on that, too. And so I think that there were some people who were a little surprised because they, you know, had a certain expectation and, you know, double-checked the rules and found out, not so okay after all.
Right, and we checked with Royal Caribbean on that, too, and it doesn't seem like they really enforce the rule as much on there, but it's better to be safe than sorry. So we contacted the necessary people, and they said, don't worry about it. And we had the note from the doctor and everything. So the main thing we were concerned about was, would my wife be getting seasick on the cruise? Because...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's...
She's already got some balance issues that she's, you know, dealing with. I remember
my wife
complaining about that quite a bit at that stage of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you you know, just it was the one that worked out time-wise. The price was right. And you were already sort of in the Norway frame of mind with Maelstrom closing. So, hey, what else are you going to do if you live in Orlando but say farewell to an attraction in Epcot by taking to the high seas?
Exactly. And, you know, one of these days we're going to stop taking trips that where we have to wear a winter coat, because this happened when we went to Tokyo Disney, too. We had to bundle up and with the hat and the gloves and the scarf, and we got out of that and said, next vacation we take is going to be warm. And what do? We turn around and do the same thing again with the Norway cruise. I left for the airport wearing shorts, and I landed putting on my winter coat.
So you're looking into those Antarctic expedition cruises next, right?
If Disney starts offering them, we'll see about booking one.
Searching for penguins.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you mentioned heading to the airport. This is a cruise where, you know, you're not sailing out of the ports that you normally would. You know, kind of ironic that being from Orlando and therefore being close to Port Canaveral and, Tampa cruise ports is kind of what got you started with this search. And instead, you ended up, you know, heading to the airport and flying across the Atlantic.
Right, and there's a lot of things that we had to take into account on that. For example, after we went to Tokyo, we knew that you have to build in a day to get accustomed to the time shift. And this was a six-hour time jump
right
forward. So we decided from the start that we were going to land at least a day early, just in case. And we ended up, the ship departed on Saturday, and we got in Thursday afternoon.
Okay. So you gave yourself basically two full days.
Right. Because we wanted to get some time in the city, and we also wanted to try to get some of the jet lag taken care of.
Okay, sure. So you are landing in Copenhagen, and did you have anything, you know, that you wanted to do in the city, or was it primarily a matter of you'd see what you could see and mostly you were going to, you know, try and adjust your personal time clock?
It was a combination of we'd see what we would see, but we also really wanted to go to Tivoli Gardens because of the connection between Walt and Disneyland. Tivoli was one of the influences when Walt was building Disneyland, so we wanted to go check that out. So that was a bit of an influence in that. When we were in the airport, we got a two-day card that allowed you to have access to all sorts of transportation in the city and a whole stack of attractions, and that included the Tivoli admission. So we got that right off the bat, checked into our hotel, and then basically hit the ground running until we couldn't do it anymore because of the time shift.
Okay.
So the first thing we did was we did the boat tour of the city. Then once we got off of that, we had dinner in Nyhavn, nice little fish restaurant, and then headed down to check out Tivoli Gardens, which is an amusement park right in the center of Copenhagen. And it's like going to Disneyland in the 1960s.
I was just going to say that was what I was picturing in my head as you were starting to discuss it was, you know, this is the sort of, idyllic Disneyland of the early 1960s.
It really is. You go inside, there's tons of live entertainment, not a piece of trash on the ground. You've got great attractions. We actually went on Wonder Ride because of my wife's restrictions, but it was a dark ride. It was an incredibly long dark ride, actually, through the Tales of Hans Christian Andersen. And one of the things that stood out in that was we went past a topless Little Mermaid and Epcot's behind because they've already got a dark ride with the Snow Queen over there.
See, they've proven that the Snow Queen can coexist with real Scandinavia.
Exactly. So we went through that, had a great time, got back and tried to get some sleep for because the sun was setting at 9 p.m. at night.
Right, because you're far enough north that you're getting the sort of northern lights effect at that point.
Right, and it just gets worse as the week goes on. So next day is Friday. We actually got moving and took a train out of Copenhagen down through Roskilde to the National Viking Museum.
Ah, so you went to go visit the you know, horned Viking helmets, right? Just like in Epcot.
Well, that's part of the thing. If you remember it at the Maelstrom film where they have the movie where the boy touches the boat, that's the Viking Museum in Oslo. So we weren't going to get to see that. And I swore up and down that I was going to see a Viking ship while we were there. So we went to this museum that had basically found five sunk Viking ships and put them back together. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, saw that and then had...
like life-size ship in a bottle almost.
Yeah. And it was... There were no recreated pieces. It was all original. So you look at these ships and it was like seeing a rotted skeleton.
Yeah. Okay. It made me think of sort of, you know, the reconstructed dinosaur skeletons that you see in natural history museums.
That's a good comparison to it. But I'd say that these dinosaur skeletons had maybe 20% of bones.
Okay. Okay.
But it was just enough for you could to sort of see that you could almost picture these on the water with the ghost Vikings on them barely sailing.
Right, the kind the of the shape and scale and
right. And what was really great about that place was they had a restaurant on the Viking Museum site where you could order what was supposedly authentic Viking food.
Do I want to know?
I'm not sure what I ate. But it was served on a plank. And it came with a glass of mead, which I didn't care too much for that. But I don't know what the Viking food was, but it was pretty darn good. I can tell you that.
Okay. So no lutefisk.
There was no lutefisk involved, no.
Okay. That's probably,
I actually looked for lutefisk. I couldn't find any.
That's that you should be thankful.
Yes. So we got done with that and we headed back into Copenhagen and wandered around the city for a while, went to the National Museum and saw the Viking helmets, and then wandered through the city and stopped at the Disney store to get my Mickey Copenhagen t-shirt.
Okay.
Because you have to do this if you're in the country, you have to get the t-shirt. It's like being at a Hard Rock Cafe.
I was going
to
say it's the Hard Rock Cafe or now it's becoming the Starbucks mug.
Exactly. And then we headed over to Tivoli again because it was included in that all-access card that we had bought for 2 days. And one of the major foods that they have in Denmark is the smørrebrød, I think it is. It's an open-faced sandwich. Sort of like if you go to Norway to the quick service and you see those odd sandwiches that nobody really orders.
Right, sure.
Very similar, but they had a vast selection of them. And we basically ate those. And it turns out on Friday night at Tivoli Gardens, they have major musical groups. We didn't stick around, but there were advertisements for people such as Elton John and Lady Gaga there.
Oh, wow. So, you know, like real music acts.
Right.
Instead of the you know, the Elton John tribute band.
Right. And this is the type of thing you would have seen back in Disneyland back in the 60s. They got legitimate musicians. And there were huge crowds there, but we were getting exhausted, so we just left early. And the next day was cruise day.
Okay, so you're getting ready to board the cruise. I have to ask at this point before we get on the ship, because you're now dealing with, jet lag, first of all, plus, pretty significantly pregnant wife here at this point. And I remember my wife at that point of her pregnancy, sleep was sometimes an issue. So how did the plan for adjusting your clocks go?
I'd say about Saturday was when we started feeling better. It was much easier going to there than it was from coming back because of the direction of travel.
Sure.
But good, yeah. Good.
All right. So you've got your boarding day there at Copenhagen. And what were your initial impressions? Because, one of the things about the Disney cruise ships is that they really do a nice job of getting that kind of grand entrance feel.
You don't have that in Royal Caribbean.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask about. So talk to me about that initial impression of the ship, and not just the theatrics of it, but also sort of the process of it. I mean, we've talked about the boarding process at Port Canaveral so frequently that, I think people who've never been on a Disney cruise probably could walk you through it now from listening to us talk through it on the show. How do they handle that kind of thing with Royal Caribbean and out of a foreign port as well?
I would say the check-in process is pretty similar to what you would have with Disney at a foreign port. They do have the separate lines for people who are members of their loyalty club in Royal Caribbean. It is the Crown and Anchor. At Disney, it's Castaway Club.
Right.
And that was the – it moved pretty efficiently. Getting on the ship after that, the theatrics that you have on Disney where everyone's applauding and announcing your name, you don't have that in Royal Caribbean. It's basically sure. You walk on a ship, they say, welcome aboard, go have lunch at the Windjammer on deck 13, deck 11 or deck 13, I don't remember which one, and that's pretty much it.
Okay. So they basically, and that's not unlike the practical side, I guess, of boarding on one of the Disney ships is, they get you on board and they, send you off to the buffet for lunch, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. But you don't have the same grand feeling that you have on Disney.
Right. Okay.
We get on there. Normally, when we would pack a swimwear to change into. At this point, we're still carting around winter gloves and scarves, and it's still 42 degrees outside and drizzling. So that was not really in the cards for this cruise. The one thing that Royal Caribbean does have that Disney doesn't have is their adults pool is sort of in a interior sunroom.
Oh, interesting.
So, we were able to sit in there and read without wearing coats at the time, but that's the big difference between the two right there that I can see immediately. Then, of course, there's the standard shore drill, and they had a deck party for the grand send off. We just sort of were on a balcony and watched the sail away, but because I don't care to go up and freeze with a DJ and wind at 40 degrees. And on the other hand, what I was seeing was just an industrial park to leave. So
it
wasn't the same Port Canaveral feel that you normally think of with a cruise.
Right. Not that tropical send off.
No, it was more like London fog.
Okay, I can see that being a little different. So you mentioned you kind of watched the sail away from your balcony. So why don't we talk a minute here about your stateroom? Again, one of the things that we hear a lot about the Disney staterooms is that, the size per category tends to be really, really good. I'm curious to what you thought both about the basic physical, you know, layout of the room, the size and all of that, but also, you know, one of the things I think that people have really, you know, locked in on the Disney cruises is that they feel like Disney's done a nice job with the ergonomics of the rooms and them being really efficiently designed. You know, I'm curious as to how this compared.
Now, I'm trying to remember it. I believe the Disney bathrooms are split. Is that correct?
Yeah. Most of the bathrooms on the Disney cruises are split. You've got the...
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on the Magic. You don't have that with Royal Caribbean. That was the first thing that jumped out to us. The bathroom is very constrained. And you can't really have more than one person there at a time. It's just physically impossible.
Right.
I would say that the room was decent sized, but it was hard to get around in.
Okay. So noticeably a little bit different in terms of the, you know, flow or convenience of the layout.
Right. It was tough to get into the closet. It was tough to get into the bathroom. I like the Disney rooms a lot better.
Okay. All right. And I assume in a, you know, a room with a veranda like that, you're talking, just a queen-size bed and, you know, some sort of armor storage type unit or?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Any noticeable, you know, notable factors of the stateroom? Anything in particular that stood out that you liked a lot or, you know, you found particularly annoying?
Other than the bathroom, no. Okay. The bathroom was probably the big downfall that we saw in the stateroom.
Sure.
So, that would be the one thing that jumped out to us more than anything.
Right. Okay, so sail away party, and then you've got this sort of initial day at sea. You know, talk a little bit about it. What did you do anything in particular that day? Is it just, you know, R&R and doing that last little bit of you know, time adjustment, or were you exploring the ship?
We explored the ship to a certain extent, but you definitely got the feel that this was not as kid friendly as Disney was. My wife and I are in our 30s, and we were well below the average demographic age there.
Okay.
And one thing that we did notice on this ship, unlike the cruises we've done out of both Port Canaveral and Tampa, is it was a much more international crowd, obviously, since it's in Europe. But you had huge numbers of Spaniards, Danes, Russians, so it gave a completely different feel to it than the typical U.S. and U.K. and Mexico crowd.
Sure, yeah.
As the entertainment that we saw, Disney has these great shows that have these elaborate storylines. Some of them are good to watch. Some of them I could care less about seeing ever again. Villains Tonight. Royal Caribbean just doesn't even try to put a plot in their entertainment. It's just either the standard musical montage where they try to sing as many songs as the audience will know.
Okay.
Or it is the random juggler or acrobatic act that they found and got on a 3-month contract.
Okay, so you basically got your you know, musical review or your circus act refugee.
Right, and the circus act refugees I could have cared less about. The musical numbers, what's big with me is they actually had a live band accompanying them, which I'm a musician. I really appreciate that. Disney, when they have their shows, they always have it to a pre-recorded soundtrack.
Right.
So that's where the big plus for the entertainment came for me. The fact that they actually had a live band.
Sure.
the first night that we were on board, we ate in the dining room, which was okay. The second night, we went to the specialty Italian restaurant, Giovanni's Table, which was wonderful. Okay. We found that the dining staff we had in the main dining room was not that good. I actually think I filed a complaint about them after the cruise.
Really, really disappointing experience.
One time when we were in the main dining room for lunch on the sea day, they actually sat us in an area that didn't appear to have a waiter assigned to it, because we had about 5 or 6 waiters look at us and then talk to somebody else, and they were all trying to figure out who was actually taking care of us. And this went on for, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, and see, that's the kind of thing that that's exactly the situation where rotational dining shines, because
right.
Your server knows by that first day, because they're looking for you to meet you that first day, because they know they're going to follow you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, in a situation where it's just sort of a, you know, catch as catch can pretty much in the main dining room, you don't have that personal relationship. And so, you know, you get the same kinds of issues you can run into in any large restaurant.
Right. So Royal Caribbean has, instead of rotation dining, they have either a early or late seating, or you can do something called My Time Dining, which you basically pick whenever you go. And I like the idea of having a dining staff that knows me and is able to help me get what I want every night.
Sure.
But with the past 2 Royal Caribbean cruises I've taken, that has not been what I've gotten from the dining staff at all. So that's a big disappointment right there.
Yeah.
But they seem to be pushing this My Time Dining pretty heavily on the Royal Caribbean ships. So,
well, yeah. I mean, it seems to me that a big difference is, the answer from their perspective to the relationship with the dining staff is the greater, you know, restaurant variety. And what they want to do is sell you on the customization of that that's inherent in it, right? You get to choose the kind of meal you want. You're not, quote unquote, stuck with the, you know, menu style for the main dining room of the day.
Right. And there were quite a few times where we looked at the menu for the dining room and went to another restaurant just because there was nothing that looked good.
Right. Yeah, sure. And so, that's I guess, the alternative that they're selling you. And I guess the choice that you end up having to make as a cruiser is where are you willing to make your trade-offs?
Right.
Because the other piece to that is that, I'm kind of glancing through the list here. It does look like they offer a pretty good array of, alternative dining options that are at least either not an additional fee or a smaller additional fee.
Right.
Is that accurate, or am I, giving too much credit to these little dollar sign ratings?
I would say that at least on this ship, the 3 places they had – Giovanni's Table, I believe, was 25 additional a person, which isn't that the cost of Palo?
I was going to say I think it did just kick up a little bit, but 25 to 30, something like that.
I would not put Giovanni's in the same category as Palo at all.
Right.
Chops Grill, their steakhouse, which we visited on the next night, we'll get to that in a second, was 35 a night. Again, I would rather go to Apollo than Chops Grill, hands down. And then on this ship, they had the sushi bar Izumi, which didn't have a cover fee, but it was a la carte. So
right.
you paid
per piece.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know on some of the other Royal Caribbean ships, they have some restaurants, they have like a $5 cover charge. That wasn't the case in this one.
Okay. So they were all at least, a $25 upcharge.
Well, right.
That's actually fairly significant, and especially when they're kind of pushing you to make those choices by using the anytime dining, pitch. I think that would get kind of annoying.
Right. And you understand that you are paying less than you would be on Disney.
Oh, sure.
But those little charges start adding up, and then they're always pushing you, do you want to buy our soda package? You have to remember, oh, Disney includes this for free.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, you were on a 7-night cruise, and you know, even $25 upgrade per day, you know, two of you is $50 a day.
Yeah.
And if it's a family of four, it's $100 a day. You know, $100 a night extra. You know, just for like the you know, one kind of step up or step to the side, really, from the main dining room.
Right. Yeah. And they even had things where you could order orange juice, but it would be an extra charge. They had the standard stuff that came out of the machine, but then they would say, well, you can get fresh orange juice with breakfast for, I think it was $3.50 a glass for 6 ounces. Okay. No, that's not going to happen. So looking at that cost difference, those are the things that I'm going to look into again when we weigh the costs of where we take a cruise next.
Yeah, because so before we walk away from it, I want to mention, because I looked it up to make sure. So the and I was right, the prices did just go up here in mid-April. So Palo is now $30 a person for both dinner and brunch. Rimi has gone to also has increased. It went up $10 at dinner to $85, and the brunch went up $5 to $55.
Yeah, I haven't done Remy yet, but compared to what I had in the specialty restaurants on Royal Caribbean, Paulo blew both of them all away.
Yeah. Okay, so as long as we're on the subject of dining, why don't we just kind of talk through what your options were and which ones you tried, and you know which ones of those that you tried you'd recommend. And maybe the easiest way to do it is I happen to have the list in front of me. So
go
I can run
it
through and you can tell me, you know, yeah, we checked that one out. No, we didn't. Maybe here's why we did or didn't.
Okay.
Chops Grill is their steakhouse. Did you try the steakhouse?
Oh, yes, we did. And I've got a story to tell you on that.
All right. Let's hear about the steakhouse.
It's the first time I went to Chops Grill on a previous cruise. They tried to upsell you on these dry-aged steaks, which you've got $30 and then it's an additional $20 more on top of that. I tried it. Some people must like these. I thought it was not anywhere close to what I would want to eat back on land.
Okay.
So this time around, we both stuck to the standard fillets, and then we tried out a series of the sides. Something in the sides must have been too rich for my stomach.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I think you know where this is going. Never cruise without Imodium.
Oh, this is where this kicked in.
Yes. Never. I never thought I would need it. But if you are on a cruise ship and you try to find Imodium, they will put you in isolation thinking that you have norovirus, and they will keep you there for until 24 hours after the last incident.
Yeah. So this is, you know, on the one hand, it's the reality of the cruise industry. You know, they're very, very sensitive to the spread of norovirus. Intestinal virus, it will spread like wildfire once it catches. And so at the earliest hint, you know, they want to, you know, they're going to impose a quarantine. And in this case, you know, you felt like you could pretty readily trace, you know, your stomach issue to, you know, a particular incident in a restaurant. But they don't care.
They don't care at all.
If the symptom is a norovirus symptom, they're going to lock you down.
Right. And come the next day, if it had been a virus, my wife would have caught it in that room. There's no question about it. They didn't care. They said the CDC guidelines say that you have to stay in 24 hours afterwards. So we had a score excursion that was leaving at 9 o'clock that morning. I was not cleared until 11 o'clock, so we had to get some refunds and figure out how to tour that city on our own.
That's really incredibly frustrating.
It at least we are travel savvy enough that we sort of try to figure out things on the fly, and sure. we had bought a couple of travel guides to take on this cruise for the country of Norway. So we were able to see what there was to see there and made the best of the situation. But if you have any chance of any possibility where you might have stomach issues with rich food, better safe than sorry.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I'm glad you mentioned, too, the fact that you know, I think sometimes people get a little too comfortable with the fact that on a cruise, you know, the sightseeing of the city piece can be handled by the cruise line, right? You can just book excursions and not worry about it, and that's convenient and that's nice. But I think you make a good point that even if you've done that, it's still a good idea to get your hands on a good guidebook and familiarize yourself with what you're going to be seeing, even if you've got a tour guide who's going to show it to you, you know, because it puts you in a better position if something unexpected happens.
Right. And we're the type that likes to prepare for the trip, and you can learn so much from whatever port you go to just by reading through and finding out about the culture, what type of restaurants are good to stop at if you're there. Because you will inevitably have a few minutes when you're not on a short excursion and you're wandering back, and you need to kill some time. Are you going to go straight back on the ship, or are you going to try to find something else to fill that time up? So right. We always travel with a travel book.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite travel book publisher when you're, you know, I mean, we know, you know, I love the unofficial guides for Disney stuff in particular. We probably could do a whole show on guidebooks. But, you know, for international destinations, do you have a particular favorite publisher?
I've been leaning towards Lonely Planet. I've also used Frommer's from time to time, but I find that a lot of them are kind of hard to get at times for the places we go. So I've never had an issue with the Lonely Planet. And in the first few pages, they have a top 10 things to do in the city. And if you don't have any other time, let's see where number one is. Let's see where number two is, and just take care of those.
Yep. Yeah, good point, and a good resource. Mm-hmm. Lonely Planet has a lot of really good guidebooks. They cover just about every, you know, significant destination.
We're very happy with them.
All right, so let's continue along our restaurant tour. They do have their own version of the sort of, you know, super high-end restaurant, which they refer to as the chef's table. Did you do the chef's table experience?
We did not do the chef's table experience. I think, is the price of that $85 a person?
I'm not sure. I don't have the exact prices here in front of me, but it lists itself as being twice as expensive as Chops Grill. And you were talking about Chops coming in at...
Chops was $35, so Chef's Table would have been $70 then.
Yeah, at least $70.
No, we are actually getting ready to close on a house, and that was money that... I figure if I'm going to spend that money, I'll spend it on a couple of souvenirs while I'm in Norway. I'll get right. myself the little Viking ship for my desk, okay. Which I actually did.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Chef's Table. So we can skip from that one. You mentioned the sushi restaurant, which basically charges by the piece. So did you enjoy Izumi?
I found Izumi to be kind of lacking in the sushi department. It was better than the grocery store sushi, but I've had a lot better too.
Okay.
So it's right in the middle.
It was better than the grocery store, but.
Right. I'd say it's right in the middle of sushi places.
Okay. So then we get one of the included restaurants that there's not an extra charge for, and that's the Windjammer Marketplace.
The Windjammer Marketplace is the buffet.
Okay.
And It's a buffet. That's all I need to say on that.
It wasn't like there was something on that buffet that was, you know, particularly stood out or, you know, made it worth seeking out.
No, and because it was European audience. They sort of tailored some of their food tastes to that. For example, one day they featured Dutch food, and my wife is of Dutch ancestry, and she had no idea what some of the stuff was they were serving.
Okay.
So, yeah, there was really nothing that stood out on there. At one point, I got a burger, and it was forgetful.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Forgettable, yeah.
Yeah, forgettable. Forgettable. It just nothing made me want to go back and have another one.
Sure.
It's just there. I think the next one on the list is Park Cafe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the deli cafe.
If Park Cafe is known for one thing, and that is their Kumelweck roast beef sandwich, which I could eat one of those every day. They basically take a bun, cut it fresh in front of you, and they cut off a couple of pieces of roast beef straight off the slab, and then put whatever toppings you want. I usually did an au jus and some horseradish, and those things are just incredible.
Yeah, and that's a kind of a signature, you know, sandwich out of, I want to say, Buffalo, New York, usually.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's referred to as beef on weck. That's what they're talking about, the Kumelweck roll there.
And apparently this is what Park Cafe is known for in all of their ships. Okay. And it's for good reason.
So there's a bright spot there, and that one's included. No extra
charge.
So we talked a little bit about the main dining room, but, you know, anything, did you end up doing any of your evening meals there in the main dining room?
About half of them we did in the main dining room. First night we did in the main dining room. Second night was at the Giovanni's table, the Italian. Mm-hmm. Third night was chef's table. The fourth night, was bananas in quarantine. yeah.
Your personal restaurant, Bananas.
Exactly. They were happy to treat me to the Brett diet, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast.
Yes.
The next night, we actually had a very late lunch in Olesund, so we just ended up going to the main dining room for dessert.
Oh, okay.
And then we had another meal at the main dining room. I think that rounds out the cruise.
Okay. So let's kind of speed ahead a little bit to Giovanni's table. You mentioned you enjoyed it.
Yes.
Talk about, you know, it's kind of its style and what you liked about it.
Giovanni's table, it is Italian, and it, I'm trying to think of a good way to compare it to Disney restaurants that we would know. Tutto Italia is probably the closest.
Okay.
It was all served if you wanted it to be family style. So you could order a couple of entrees and they would come out and you could pick and choose what you had off of the trays. We got, I think, two or three entrees to try between us.
Sure.
And they had great bread and an amazing dessert tray. I wish I could remember what was on it.
But you remember it was good.
Yes. I got away from taking pictures of my food to a certain extent because I started getting annoyed with myself for doing it. And this is one of those cases where I wish I had.
Right, right. Yeah, you decided you didn't want to be that guy anymore. And just about that time you realized it would have been nice to have been that guy.
Right, right. So that was Giovanni's table.
All right. So is there anything else about the dining experiences on board the Serenade of the Seas that, you know, is notable or worth talking about? I mean, you know, sometimes there's a cafe or coffee shop or something like that that, you know, you found particularly interesting or.
They did have another coffee shop that was on board that was not included. You could get lattes or mochas there, but they would charge it to your account, which is, I think, $3 or $4 a piece. We did room service a couple times, which you had to almost guess what they were going to deliver and try to make estimates on how much you would want to eat. I remember at one point I ordered toast with jam, and they brought me one piece of toast and one jam from their collection, and it was not anything I would have wanted to eat. So the next time, I think I put down toast for 3 people and jam for 5 people.
Okay. Interesting approach.
So it was enough to get what I wanted. So that was...
You know, that's what matters. Whatever works.
And on the days when you have early shore excursions, we tend to do room service because I want to get out the door and not deal with finding the buffet.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense.
Right. We're already cramped for getting ready in the room, so just grab something that we can eat on the go and keep moving.
Okay. Yeah, I can completely understand that. So let's get back to the you know, cruise itself. You got that initial day at sea that we talked about, and then you hit your first port of call, and I'm going to make you pronounce these because they're Norwegian cities. But I believe you start at, I guess I'll take a stab at it, but you started at Stavanger?
Stavanger.
Okay.
And when we were getting close to Stavanger, we opened the curtains to see what we would see. And wouldn't you know it, the first thing we saw was an oil rig. And it turns out that Norway's main economy right now is crude oil. So we get off the ship. Our short excursion is in the afternoon in Stavanger. So we're sort of wandering around the city. See, we stop at the ATM to get Norwegian kroner. And walking through the streets, trying to see what the town looks like, and it starts raining, which is typical Norwegian weather this time of year. So we pull out the book, and we're trying to see what can we see in the city that is not in the rain. At one point, we stepped into a little toy shop just so we could try to figure this out. And we ended up visiting the Norwegian Petroleum Museum.
Okay.
Which is basically the finale of Maelstrom. You are touring the history of oil in Norway. They had samples of crude oil. I think you could buy some and take it home with you. I don't know why you would. You could see how Norway's energy policy has changed. You can see the entire history of all of the oil rigs in Norway from the first exploration. You could practice a sample escape from an oil rig. You could stick your head in a diving suit to see what it's like when you're exploring underground. And they had a couple of movies that would alternate between English and Danish, so we sat through both of those. But it got to the point where we could actually pinpoint which oil rig that the Indian of Maelstrom was modeled after once you looked at enough of these pictures.
Yeah, it sounds like it's an interesting experience. I mean, I guess you don't really think about an education in petroleum engineering as a cruise point, but it sounds like it was an interesting excursion.
Yeah, and this we actually did on our own. We didn't do it as a cruise excursion, okay. And we saved a lot of money doing it that way, too. I think that we would have paid triple the price for museum admission had we done it as part of the excursion. But the guidebook actually said, this museum sounds boring, but you will spend more time at it than you imagined. And that was true.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the reality is, it always seems to me that excursions to, thematically focused museums like that are almost inherently going to be excessively expensive, because there's any museum that is focused like that is designed to be self-directed.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's one thing if you're going to have a guided tour of someplace like, you know, the Louvre or you know, a large entity that's got a diverse collection that it's important and worthwhile to get expert information to help guide you through it. But something like this where, you know, it's devoted to a single subject, that's its point, is to tell you this story. So you really shouldn't need an extra narrator.
And what's even more is this place was targeted for both adults and kids.
Oh, cool.
They had tons of interactive experiences there. You could sit down and watch a helicopter attempt to take off for a oil rig while you had lights flashing around you. You could climb up an oil rig and sort of get in the, I want to say the helm of it or the command center.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Look around. We did not try the escape simulation where you could slide down like you, yeah. Like if you already caught on fire, they had a little tube you could slide down. We did not do that.
Okay, so no escape chute.
No escape chute. So we got done with that and went back and ate on the ship because Stavanger is an oil town. There wasn't really much to eat right at the port other than a Burger King that was selling a chili chicken sandwich that we didn't really want to waste our money on.
Yeah.
And then we took the afternoon excursion, which went to a monastery, which it was the most interesting of the options that we had there, but it was not bad at all. It took us back past a series of Viking ruins. They had, ruins that were placed on the side of the road, a couple places that had been there since the original time of the Vikings, and they explained that these were to commemorate certain people who had died, and they didn't remember who they were, and they were sort of protected. And then we went up to the church and toured the monastery, which they had sample monks sitting with their hoods on, sort of like they were there to, I don't know, watch over the place, take you to hell if you got too close to them. But it was a nice little excursion.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I'm glancing at a couple of pictures online, and it looks like you know, as long as you're looking away from the oil rigs, it looks like there's some really beautiful scenery there.
There really is. But you just have to remember with that city, it is an oil town, and everything is more expensive there because it is geared towards business people. They're on expense accounts.
Sure.
So
interesting.
So we got done with that, headed back in, and that was the night that I had my incident.
Right. So the next morning was really the one that was interfered with. You had a port of call at Bergen. With an 8 a.m. arrival, and obviously you weren't, you know, you were supposed to do a 9 a.m. excursion, but you weren't cleared till 11. So
no, that was actually the next
this
day.
So this is the day you lost completely.
Right. So I actually sent my wife out on the excursion while I stayed in the room and watched Italian television.
That's another place where you missed Disney Cruise Line, right? You didn't have the entire library of Disney movies to choose from to occupy yourself.
Right, but you did have Home Improvement in about three different languages.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Nothing
and
like Tim the Toolman Taylor in Portuguese.
They even dubbed the grunts. So while I'm sitting there nibbling on bananas and drinking water, my wife's out touring one of the things I really wanted to see, which was they took you to a stave church, and they actually had it under construction at the time, so you couldn't go in, but it was one of the few stave churches that still exists in Norway, which that was I saw some pictures. I was just blown away by it.
Right, and these are the, you know, what the state church that's the, you know, that is the heart of the Norway Pavilion at Epcot is sort of, you know, built around.
Right. So she went to that and to the home of Edvard Grieg, which the excursion was sort of picked for me because I'm a musician, and Grieg is a famous Norwegian composer, so I wanted to see that. So it was okay that I missed it. I got the souvenir book out of it and all, but that was her short excursion, so I got lots of pictures so I could see what I missed. And we sort of decided that at some point we will take our kids and go to Bergen at some point in the future to make up for it. So.
All right. Well.
And the next morning was when we arrived at Ålesund. And okay. We were supposed to.
This is where you have the delayed start.
Right. We were supposed to go on something called the Path of the Trolls, which would have been a bus ride with hairpin turns up the highest vertical wall in Europe. And it was supposed to have an authentic Norwegian lunch with it, too. And it was basically an 8.5-hour excursion.
Wow. So you really did have, even with a late start, a full day.
Right. So, but on the other hand, the ship didn't leave Ålesund until 7:30, because at this point, you're getting to sunset is around 9:45 p.m.
Oh, right, because you're heading north.
Right. So at 11 a.m., they clear me, and we basically hit the ground running. We get tickets for the hop-on, hop-off bus, which most of us have seen them at various cities that we've gone to, New York, Washington. You pay something like $20, and you get a narrated tour, and you can get on wherever you want or get off and wander around for a while. So we did that as a we don't want to walk around. Let's see what we can. And that was a very good choice given the situation we were in.
Sure.
It actually took us to a place we would never have gone to anyway. We pulled out the travel guide again, and one of the places on this bus ride was called the Sunbore Museum, which they basically took all sorts of Viking boats and houses from Norway, from all of the country, and put them here as an open-air museum.
Oh, cool. So you basically got like almost a composite town of Norway.
Right, but over the course of about 1,000 years.
Uh-huh.
So we were able to pop our head into a lot of these houses that they had unlocked. We wandered around. They had a boathouse with recreated Viking ships, so I was able to get the picture of me reaching up and touching a ship like the little boy at the beginning of the movie. No, I did not have Viking flashbacks. And at that point, we wandered around there for maybe 2 hours.
Nice.
Just one of these things that it wasn't on a short excursion, but if we hadn't had the bus and that guidebook, we would have never found.
Right. Yeah, and it, you know, it's kind of a happy accident. I mean, you know, the only reason really you were doing it is that you missed the excursion you were supposed to be on.
Right, and this is where we started discovering some Norwegian delicacies. Like one of the things they serve commonly is waffles, and you either have them with strawberry jam and either brown goat cheese or sour cream. So we had a waffle with strawberry jam and goat cheese as a snack, and now I'm going around from grocery store to grocery store trying to find this goat cheese.
Yeah, good luck.
It was amazing.
It's just soft cheeses are hard because they can't import them.
Right. So,
So you had one more. Well, I'm sorry. I don't want to push you out of Oleson too soon if you're not done.
we had a little bit more in Oleson. We ended up at another museum at Oleson that was sort of off the beaten path. Oleson is supposedly the most beautiful city in Norway based on architecture, and it's partly because around 1904 it burned to the ground, and so they brought in all sorts of architects to come in and build it with Art Nouveau architecture. Okay. So they had a museum.
They rebooted the entire city in Art Nouveau.
Pretty much. And they had a museum that was dedicated to this. And one of the cool things that they had in it was something called a time machine, which you got in and you selected your language. And then it took you through a recreation of what it would have been like on the night of the fire.
Ooh.
So you had narration, you had fake flames being projected on the walls, you had pictures of the city before and after. It was, and this all happened in the course of, I want to say, 10 minutes. And that was one of the better museum experiences I've had. And it was another thing, it was completely off the path.
It reminds me a little bit in the explanation of, you know, the fire version of the Twister attraction at Universal.
Yes, but this was actually good.
No burning cows.
Exactly. There were cows, but none of them were on fire.
Okay.
So then we wandered around a little bit, checked out some of the souvenir shops, which were entirely troll related. You know you're at a tourist shop when they either have trolls in the window or a big troll you can stand outside and take a picture with.
Oh, of course.
And then end up finding a Norwegian restaurant for a late lunch, which had a great beer. I wish I would have gotten the name of it. And I had something called bacalao, which is like a fish stew.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of wish they had this at Akershus. I would go back more often if they did.
You know, it's interesting. I almost wonder whether that's kind of one of those items that, you know, was on the old menu once upon a time that I never got to try, you know, and was eliminated over time just because, you know, guests got scared away by something that clearly, you know, Norwegian ethnic. It
right.
Scared away from it.
I really miss the old menu. I do have fond memories of eating it cold scrambled eggs at the smorgasbord that they had there for lunch, which first thought doesn't sound great, but that was a great meal. And I am disappointed that they turned into princesses and watered down Norwegian food. So we got done with that, headed back to the cruise ship, and I headed for the highlight of the trip, which if you're going on the Disney cruise, this will be really great at this time of year, the Geiranger Fjord.
Okay.
It's a UNESCO site, so it's protected by both the government and the United Nations. And it is basically mountains that have been pushed up as the geologic plates move together, and all the snow at the top will just melt as starting in May and June and form these beautiful waterfalls.
Interesting.
So one of them is known as the Seven Sisters, which is seven waterfalls that fall next to each other based on the way the rocks have carved it out over the years. We went the first couple weeks of May, so there were only about three of them flowing at the time because...
Oh, so they took a while to thaw.
Right. We got on the bus, and it was still snowing on us. So,
oh, okay.
Once you get to June, when the Disney ships start getting there, that's when the water really starts flowing, and these waterfalls become amazing.
Yeah, I bet.
So they had a fjord center that you could go to and tour, and we went up to a couple of bus. We took a bus to a couple of pretty high points to look down over the entire fjord, and that took three or four hours. Then got back to the city, which is basically, this city lives off tourist money. There are only 250 people that live there. Basically, the cruises just come in and are the economy for the city. They don't even have a standard dock for a cruise ship. They have a mobile dock that they sort of piece together once the ship comes into the area.
Interesting.
So they even said, if you want to watch this put together, come out this time in the morning, and they basically boat the dock out. It folds up like an accordion, and they unfold it and bring it straight to the ship.
So it's like your description reminds me of, I don't know, maybe these are only around my house, but those old wooden like yardsticks that folded out 6 inches at a time.
That's exactly what it is. I haven't seen one of those in years. I need to get one of those.
But your description made me flash on that.
That's exactly what it is. That's the way it operates. It would go out diagonally one way, and then another part would go out diagonally the other way, just sort of zigzagging out until it got to the cruise ship.
Okay. Interesting.
So this is a tiny town that wouldn't exist without tourism, and they had maybe two or three souvenir shops and two or three small cafes. So we got a little something to tide us over. And then the afternoon excursion. Now, we had gotten refunds from the excursion the day before that we couldn't make the walk of the trolls.
Oh.
So we decided there wasn't much to do in the city. So we needed to find some way to fill it. And one of the remaining excursions was visit a goat farm. So we signed up and we visited a goat farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk to us about the goat farm.
This is actually one of the most interesting things. And I would have never done it if we hadn't been to the point where we had the money that we needed to spend.
Right.
We basically got in a bus and headed about an hour away from the town into the middle of Norway. And it was just this man and his wife. And this was her parents' farm that they had inherited. And all they did was basically raise goats and cows. And they would make goat cheese and goat's milk and cow's cheese. And
basically had a working, small dairy farm.
Right. You had the goats right next to you as you walked up the path. They showed you how the cheese was made. They had samples for you to try. They tried to sell you some. I didn't try to take it back on the cruise ship because it said don't bring any food back. But it was just a nice little quaint piece in Norway that you wouldn't have seen it otherwise.
Sure. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and it was it was clearly they had another portion of their income based on bringing tourists there, but it felt the least touristy of anything that we did.
Huh. Yeah, and it just sounds like, that it was a real slice of what that place at least was like before the cruise ships were coming through.
Right. With when you're in the cruise area, it was very clear they had a lot of people who were from Italy who were running the tour buses. But these people were legitimately Norwegian. They were happy about the farm. They were happy to answer any question you had. They had a couple of people from West Africa who were working on the farm with them. But everything else about it was legitimately, you are in a Norwegian farm in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing around.
Huh. Well, that sounds nice. I'm going to be looking forward to seeing some of the pictures you took around there.
Yeah, I'm still sorting through them. I took about 2,500, and on that last day in the Fjord area was at least 1,000 of them.
Wow.
So when we were leaving and going past some of these fjords, I was just basically running the camera as fast as I could, trying to get something that could capture it, because even with some of the wide angles you had on these cameras that we have these days, you cannot picture how vast these waterfalls are unless you are a good distance away.
Huh.
It's almost impossible to get a handle on how big these are.
Sure, sure. All right, so that was your last port of call. You've got one last kind of home stretch to sail.
Right, we had a full sea day, and yeah. part of the issue at this point was the Geiranger Fjord is very far north, so we've got sunset at 10:15, 10:30 now.
Oh, right, yeah. So the day, it's a very long day.
It's a very long day. So we're headed back. We slept as much as we possibly could. But you're coming back, and I'd say it's about 45 degrees on deck, 40, 45 degrees. You've got a strong wind blowing across. Now, we had a lot of people on the ship that were European, a lot of Russians, a lot of Germans, a lot of Danish. I'm walking around in my sweater and coat trying to stay warm, and you've got whole families who are sunbathing with just their swim trunks on. You've got kids jumping into the water with the fountains splashing on them. I don't know how they did it. I don't go swimming unless it's like about 80 degrees or so, and these guys were,
I don't get it either, and it's definitely a Scandinavian thing. My father-in-law's family is Scandinavian folk, and they've got a cabin on the lake in Minnesota, like in the North Woods.
Mm-hmm.
They go up there in July, and it's still 50 degrees, 65 degree water. And there are 80-year-old people who live out there and start every morning with a plunge and a brief swim.
Yeah, never going to happen. So we sail back that entire day and then arrive at Copenhagen again the next Saturday. Now, the timing of the flights meant that we had one more night while we were sort of waiting for the flight the next day. So, two things that we did. The first one was we took a train up to see the castle from Hamlet that was about an hour north in Denmark. And we wandered through that and the Naval Museum up there. And then on the way back, we went back to Tivoli. To the place we had s'more bread the week before, because it was a great sandwich place. And then we stuck around for the nighttime entertainment at Tivoli, which included watching Illuminations.
Really?
Tivoli has a show every night called Illuminations that is a water, laser, and fire and fog show.
So as much of Epcot's show as they can get away with without it being a violation of international intellectual property law.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, I think I liked the Tivoli version better.
Wow. High praise.
Yeah, it didn't have the vast scale of the Inferno Barge or the LED globe or the huge amount of fireworks. But it's, if you think that Illuminations is avant-garde, you haven't seen anything until you see this. At one point, it was sort of like we were in a laser vortex swirling around us. I don't know how they did it in such a small area, but that was, it was great music. It was a great show. And maybe 300 people saw it that night. Maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not only is it a great show, but it's intimate, too.
It's very intimate.
Huh. That's incredible.
Then, since this is Saturday night, they had the Tivoli Big Band playing, and they had fireworks at right around midnight. So we stuck around for the weekly fireworks show, which was a pretty good fireworks show. It wasn't as big as ones you would see at Disneyland, but it was much longer than we expected and was to a rock score and much better than anything that we've seen at Universal.
Huh.
This was legitimate fireworks. So if you are ever there, go see the fireworks and go see Illuminations in Denmark.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it's definitely worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was well worth the money.
All right. So, you know, that's kind of your grand conclusion, is those big fireworks there in Denmark, right? How quickly then did you head back to the U.S.? Did you do, more than that one night on your return in Copenhagen, or did you come on home?
That pretty much closed out the park, so it was about midnight. We got back to the hotel about 1 a.m., and then we were checking in our bags at 8 the next morning for our flight.
All right, so you're on your way back, and now this is when the jet lag really is going to hit, because
right.
you were up late, and then you're going to, you know, take this. How long is the flight?
The first flight was 2 hours to Frankfurt, and then from there it was, I want to say, 11 back to Orlando.
Okay, so you're going to fly 13 hours, and then on top of that, you're going to lose 6 hours total.
And so, then the next day, I had to travel to California for work.
Oh. All right, so you're already 19 hours, basically, in your head, right? You're 19 hours just to get to Orlando, and then you're going to travel across another four time zones right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was a fun week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who planned that?
It was just bad timing. Bad timing.
Ouch. All right. Well, so hell of a trip. Looking back at it, and you know, there was a lot going on there. If you had to pick out sort of the three highlights of this trip for you, what would you say those three highlights were?
The Geiranger Fjord, Tivoli Gardens, and the little museum in Ålesund, where they had the Viking ships rebuilt, that you were able to walk through them in the houses.
Uh-huh.
So those would be the three highlights.
All right. And before we wrap up, I have to ask, did you see any emaciated polar bears?
No, did not see any emaciated polar bears, but did see plenty of trolls, saw plenty of cruise ships, saw plenty of people with Norwegian flags, and I want to say I saw plenty of fake villages of Vikings. So almost the entire ride.
So everything except the emaciated troll or emaciated polar bear, basically.
Pretty much.
All right. So then the last thing I would say is that, you know, anything from that trip that you would say, you know, if I had it to do over, this I'd skip or I'd find something else instead. other than the rich food, because there's nothing you knew about that.
Right. From now on, I'm definitely taking Imodium with me anytime I travel. But if there was one thing I'd skip, we visited a little museum in Copenhagen that was the Hans Christian Andersen Experience. We went there because it was part of that card, and we had some time to kill before we went to dinner.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know if it would be appropriate for anyone above the age of 7 or so. You basically walk through various scenes from Hans Christian Andersen, and you would press a button, and they would tell you the story. And there would be just a still window of the characters, and a couple of lights would flash. We thought it would be very interesting to go in, but it just sort of was blah, and something that should have warned us that this might be an issue. It was connected to the Ripley's, believe it or not, next door to it. So that should have been a warning sign right there, but that was probably the meh part of the trip. But we look at it as we didn't pay anything extra for it. It was free, so it was just an hour.
But it's not something that if you were picking things out that you would include it.
No,
you know, specifically.
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jeff, you know, thanks for coming on the show again and talking about the trip. I love getting these shows where we get to share a little bit different kind of adventure. Getting to hear about the Norway cruise, even though it was Royal Caribbean as opposed to Disney. So a lot of these ports would be the same if you sailed Disney.
Right, and I was not the first to pass that way, and I will not be the last.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.